fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Hey, darn right it is. What's up? Welcome into it. It is a Thursday, the pre-Friday celebration, greatest day of the entire week. It's time for you and I to carpe diem all over this place, if you know what I mean. So great to have you along for the ride going into an Easter weekend. Dude, Easter, it's officially here. And it's in March, which is very strange. So the times have changed. We are now a quarter of the way through 2024. Put that into perspective as you get closer to election season. So with that being said, let's kick it off today for the pre-Friday celebration. Broadcasting out of the heart of the nation, out of the KQAM studios in Wichita, Kansas. So great to have you. Broadcasting on multiple radio stations and TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you watch or listen to the show. Your millennial general reporting for duty like we do every single day.
Do it live!
As you know, because we're going into Easter holiday, I figured that we need to talk about some Easter stuff. And it's, I guess, controversial in today's times because everything's controversial, especially if you talk about your faith or your religion or your spiritual beliefs in some fashion, that's very toxic. You know that what do they call it? Christian nationalism in the nation. So, yeah. The taking over of Christian nationalism. So what does that mean exactly? And how does religion and how does politics kind of blend together? We'll talk about that with our guest right out of the gate here. Bottom of the hour, we have Dr. Brad Stewart. He'll be joining us on the program with his latest book, a fascinating conversation, Facing Death, Spirituality, Science, and the Surrender at the End of Life, as he's been one that's worked with hospice for years in preparing individuals to essentially cross over. And what does that look like? And how do you prepare someone or yourself in that manner when that time arrives? So we'll talk with Brad Stewart about that at the bottom of the hour. Right out of the gate, though, man, I don't want to waste any time because there's a lot to talk about with our guest here. First off,
what's trending today?
I want to ask you a simple question. The term evangelical, what exactly does that mean? What does it mean to you? What does it mean in today's times? And I ask that not only in the religious context of what evangelical means, being like an evangelical Christian, but in the political term of evangelical. Because as you know, words adapt, words change. Okay, I take that back. They're not supposed to change, but we change the definition of words to maybe make ourselves feel better or because we like to make things feel a little bit less scary than what they really are. And I always love to use the example of if you Google the definition of socialism today, and then you go to like a Merriam-Webster dictionary from like the 1930s and look at the definition of socialism, completely different definition, completely changed the term of it because today they want it to feel all warm and cozy and how it's accepted and how it's of the people and how it's this wonderful thing. When we look at the definition from back then, we understood exactly what it meant, which is a toxic form of government that's going to destroy society and probably harm a whole bunch of people. But the definitions are completely different. Are we seeing the evolution or some type of evolving of terms like evangelical? To talk about that and so much more, really happy to have on the program, he is the president of Infinity Concepts. Excited to have on here Mr. Mark Dreistadt. Mark, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, Andy. It's great to be with you today.
Yeah, really excited to have you on here. Happy Easter, and what a fascinating topic as we go into an Easter holiday, I think, with the term evangelical, because it seems like there's as much of a political connotation for this word as there is religious in today's time, isn't there?
Yeah, well, there certainly is. And I think the challenge is, you talked about the changing definition of socialism. I think the challenge with evangelical is there are too many definitions for evangelical. And when you read something in the newspaper, you see something on the news, you hear it spoken in the pulpit, those may be very, very different terms when people say, refer to evangelicals. And so one of the things that we do research with the evangelical community on an ongoing basis. We release reports, six reports a year, every other month. And we're very careful to keep our definition simple, clean, and clear. And we use the same definition as the National Association of Evangelicals, which is basically this, that an evangelical is someone who agrees strongly with four theological statements. Number one, the Bible is the highest authority for what I believe. Number two, Jesus Christ's death on the cross is the only sacrifice that can remove the penalty of sin. Number three, only those who trust in Jesus Christ alone as their Savior receive God's free gift of eternal salvation. And four, it's important for me to encourage non-Christians to trust Jesus Christ as their Savior. If you believe those four theological positions, you are an evangelical. However, there are various researchers or publishers or authors that use a myriad of different definitions for the same term.
Yeah, that's great. Now, going back to one of the original understandings or definitions of evangelical, is it relatively the same to what you guys are doing right now? I mean, is that pretty similar to what the original intent was for?
Yeah, I believe it was, and that's why we went back to the National Association of Evangelicals, who have done the research and have done the hard work on the history and the historicity of this, and we've aligned with their definition because we believe that is the core, the anchor, and the beginning where evangelical should start and end.
Where did it start to blend into politics with the term evangelical?
Well, you know, I think in this report that we just came out with, which is Evangelicals in the Public Arena, we began to explore how evangelicals felt about public policy issues. A lot of times the research that we're doing has to do with churches or giving or Bible study or spiritual development. But we decided to tackle some public policy issues. And I think what we discovered is that evangelical Christians care about public policy. Now, they may not agree on which public policies they feel are the most important. They may not agree with the positions that you take on those, but evangelicals care and they want to have a level of influence in the dialogue about these various public policy issues. And I think that's where evangelicals began to be connected with the political arena, because they began to care about things like abortion and free speech and freedom of religion, and those became public issues in the regular marketplace. And so obviously there was an affiliation that was established. Unfortunately, it's not always the accurate definition. What we perceive in the press is not always the accurate perception of the way evangelicals act or feel.
Yeah. Well, when you think about it in the political sense and from the election standpoint, you think of the evangelical right, which is what the media and the political experts and election pundits always say is the evangelical right, which is, mm-hmm. I think, predominantly and majoritively on the right side of the aisle, the conservative stance of the aisle. But according to your guys' poll, that roughly 36% that identify as the evangelical say they don't identify as conservative, which I find kind of surprising, honestly.
Well, we did too. That 24% consider themselves politically moderate, and 12% consider themselves politically liberal. And
wow.
So that was a little surprising to us, because we thought, as you did, that surely this is a consensus of opinion amongst this group. But in fact, we see that within evangelical communities, there is a broad diversity of thought and opinion about these various issues.
Yeah. That is interesting. Have you been able to go a little bit deeper with maybe that 12% that identify as liberal and ask them about some of the social issues? Because, I mean, I think the stance, the hard stance on abortion, let's take for example, on the Democrat side, the hard stance of having women's rights, so on, is what they call it, open air quotes here for the radio listeners, of really being able to have an abortion willy-nilly at their own cause, is a relatively newer stance for the Democrat Party. Because even back during the Clinton era, it was nowhere near as extreme as what it was back then, and I'm curious on how many of them recognize how far left that party has gone on some of these social issues that, at least in the majority of Christian perspectives, contradict their values.
Yeah, in fact, when we talk about moderate, liberal, and conservative, we can compare the evangelical liberals to the mainstream liberals and find that they are more conservative than the mainstream.
Mm.
So though they consider themselves to be liberal, and they would take a more liberal view than conservatives do, they are certainly more in the moderate space than the far left that we're seeing today.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. We're talking with Mark Dreistadt. He's with Infinity Concepts, which you can find on their website at infinityconcepts.com. Real quickly, let's talk about this term of Christian nationalism, because this has become a new term, apparently, of trying to make it a derogatory comment from the left attacking conservatives. And it really came out after Speaker of the House Mike Johnson came out and made the comment that, you know, he's a Christian and that his morals and values are read the Bible, which is very common sense, I think, for those that are predominantly on our side of the aisle. But now that's a bad thing. First off, nationalism is apparently bad, thinking the country's great. But then these Christian nationalists that they're trying to deem as like some weird militant religious group trying to take over and enforce their will on other individuals. I don't see that anywhere, Mark. Do you?
No, I don't see that at all. I think that is, what's the term? Fake news? Is that what they say? I think it's certainly amped up significantly from where it is. Certainly, conservatives, especially the conservative evangelicals, certainly have strong opinions about certain issues. Some issues are very strongly, but they're also the liberals have some strong concerns about some of their issues, which are a little different than the conservative issues. But the thing is, evangelicals feel like they, just as they have a responsibility to share their faith, they have this responsibility to share their moral perspective with others and friends. And so I think because they're voicing that and because they want to live a life that is consistent with the Bible and with biblical values, they're being judged and evaluated unfairly in many cases.
Yeah, that is very true. I want to shift to the younger generations. I'm part of the millennials. Yeah. I'm 35, and we see stat and poll after poll showing that the attendance in church is decreasing overall in the nation, and especially the younger generations where they may have a belief, a spiritual belief and a religious belief, but they're not attending church. In your opinion, is this a cause for concern, and is this correlated with some of the current events and social stances that we're seeing in society today?
Well, I definitely think it is a cause for concern. We, in younger people, we're seeing, you know, a very an openness to a lot of different voices, and that can be a good thing. That can be a bad thing. When the voices are antithetical to a biblical worldview, then that becomes to be a problem. And so, what we find is that there is less attendance in church, but there is a lot of interest in spirituality. And if we can make the bridge, if we can build the bridge, we can still reach them. In fact, one of our more recent studies, the one just prior to this, we found out that of evangelicals, when they came to faith, most evangelicals came to faith. In fact, it was 82% came to faith before they were 18.
Wow.
So, you know, as we're looking at young people today, it's really important that we share biblical values, that we share biblical truth, and that we communicate what it means to be a follower of Christ.
Yeah, that's a great point. Mark, we got to take a hard break here. Can you stick over another segment with us?
You bet.
Awesome.
You bet.
I love the conversation. And you brought up the exact point I wanted to get to, was that a lot of them are going towards maybe not necessarily the church, but spirituality in general. So how do you bridge those two, with spirituality and with religion and with the evangelical movement, so to speak? And how do you get them interested in that sense? Because it is quite fascinating where there is a vast majority of the younger generation that believes in a higher power and some sort of spirituality, but may not have the structure and the foundation of what that spiritual belief may actually be, or be able to define it in some way. So we'll get to that when we come back here right around the corner. It's Mark Dreistadt with Infinity Concepts, infinityconcepts.com, for your pre-Friday celebration going into Easter weekend. I figured this would be the appropriate time to have these conversations here on The Voice of Reason. However you believe, whatever your views are, it's definitely an interesting conversation. Lots more coming up. Stay right here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. Welcome back into it. 24 minutes past the hour. Radio, TV, live streaming, podcasting, however you check us out, always very much appreciated, which, again, going into Easter, lots to be thankful for. As I mentioned earlier this week, we officially hit 100,000 downloads on our podcast of this program for the regional show here during the week, the national show during the weekend, which is amazing. So thank you guys for that. We also have more radio affiliates coming on board. We'll be announcing those in the next week or so. We also have new partners coming on. I gave a little tease of that on our social media yesterday. So More to come with that announcement next week. Also, by the way, as a reminder, if you want to become the latest Hoosier-holic, we have our newsletter coming out on Monday. We do it the first Monday of every month, and you can sign up by going to the website at HoosierReason.com. No I in Hoosier, H-O-O-S-E-R, Reason, HoosierReason.com. Type in your email and say, it says, do you want to become a Hoosier-holic? You're like, yeah. And that's what you do, and you'll be in there. It's totally free. We do not spam you. We just send you a once-a-month email with our blog. Great content for the show and the network and everything that we're doing. So make sure to sign up for that one. All right. We got a couple minutes left here with Market Drystat. He is the president of Infinity Concepts, infinityconcepts.com, as we're talking about really the religious layout of the nation and the decrease of attendance at churches, the interest in spirituality from the young generation, and what the term evangelical actually means. And Mark, as I tease going into the break, there is a very big interest in quote-unquote spirituality. In fact, over in Europe, there has been a massive increase in even support for paganism, which is very interesting. And a lot of people thought that we would go with the decrease of attendance at church. A lot of people expected us to go more towards an atheist viewpoint as a nation and in the younger generation. But instead, they're going back to kind of originality of some pagan beliefs, which I find kind of fascinating. But with those that are interested in spirituality, how do you start to blend those two and actually give them a kind of a guidelines and foundation for those that want to go down that road?
Well, I think that the answer is in three points. The first one would be understanding that we're in a postmodern culture. When I was growing up, I'm a little older than you, Andy. When I was growing up, the Bible was the Word of God. And whether you were churched or not, you had a respect for the Bible and you recognized it to be the holy book, the book that contained moral and ethical truth. That is no longer the case. The Bible is just another book in our culture today and is disregarded. So first of all, we have to realize that young people today have no moral compass. They're working out of their own value system. So the tried and true moral compass of the Word of God is not necessarily something they know or understand. Plus, they technically, oftentimes are biblically illiterate. They know very little about the Bible. And even though we talk about Easter, so many don't even realize what Easter is all about. Yeah. The second thing on that is that most evangelism in our study about the spiritual journey and how people become Christians, they become Christians because of relationships. Parents are the number one influencers, but then you have spouses and friends and other leaders, and coaches and teachers and folks who have points of influence. So the whole idea of personal evangelism, relationship evangelism, sharing your heart, inviting others to come and share in your faith is a critical piece. And the third part of that is understanding that a spiritual transformation is not a one-step process. Just like giving birth to a child is a 9-month gestation process, spiritual rebirth requires a gestation process to move from a point of not understanding who God is and what his love for us is all about and what his salvation plan is. Moving from that point to being a follower of Christ takes a series of understandings, decisions, and enlightenments to reach that point. And our role is just to continue to share our faith and to share Christ and let the Holy Spirit do his work.
Yeah, you're spot on that one. It's not a one-and-done kind of thing. I realize that the deeper you go, the more interesting it becomes and the more questions that you have and the deeper you go even further. So that's always fun as well. Mark, happy Easter to you, my friend. We're out of time. We got to get you back on the show again real soon, brother.
Okay, we'll do it.
Hey, appreciate it very much. Yeah, absolutely. Go to the website. Check it out, infinityconcepts.com. Lots more coming up right around the corner. It's the Voice of Reason on a Thursday. Stay here.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When Reason Meets Radio, this is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed. Reason, common sense, rationale. That's just what we do here on this program each and every day. Have no fear. The Voice of Reason is here. Welcome back into it. Last half hour on the home stretch as we go through our pre-Friday celebration going into Easter holiday, which is why we thought it was appropriate to step away from the hard politics of the day and focus on some little bit more philosophical, theological conversations into the Easter celebration for those that enjoy. And again, I'm not trying to push anything on anybody. Believe what you want to. Do your thing. I don't really care. We love you all to death. Everybody's on their own personal path, and I have my beliefs. I'm sure that my beliefs, for the most part, align with most of the listeners for a conservative talk radio show, but nonetheless, I find them quite intriguing with different aspects of it. We had Mark Dreistad on the program about the term evangelical being more of a political term today than an actual religious term. But as we talked about, there's an ever-growing interest in just the concept of spirituality in general, which I've been absolutely fascinated with, which is what we like to focus on and talk about quite a bit on this program as well, which leads us to our next guest here on the program.
What's trending today?
And I am super excited to have this individual on the program. He is the author of the latest book, Facing Death, Spirituality, Science, and Surrender at the End of Life, helping with hospice for years and helping individuals prepare themselves to transition to the other side. And what does that actually look like? And how do you do something like that? Now, again, being 35 and a millennial, I have hopefully some time before I have to worry about that, but it still intrigues me nonetheless. Excited to have on the program Dr. Brad Stewart. Brad, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Happy Easter. Appreciate you jumping on here. What a fascinating conversation, because I can only imagine the stories that you've had and how you actually, well, let's start off here, how you even got to the point of wanting to help individuals and try and understand that transition towards the end of life.
Well, that's a great question to start with. I have been a physician for almost 50 years. When I started out in the 70s, people never talked about the end of life. It was something that I came upon because I did a lot of work in my office in the ICU and the hospital, and I found that the people that were the most challenging were the ones that I couldn't cure. And I really got interested in it. And, you know, it's Easter, and this is a good time to talk about it because this is the season. Winter's turning to spring. It's the season of death and rebirth. And it's my mission to help people understand that this is part of life. It's not a separate thing. And it's a very sacred time if you handle it properly.
That is very true. And we don't usually think about it until it's that time and we kind of go into panic mode, which I'm sure, have you seen people go into panic mode of like, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going to happen when this all ends up happening?
Yes, all the time. And in fact, it's natural for human beings to be very anxious when they're first told by their physicians, if their physicians tell them at all. Many doctors don't like to talk about this, but when people first learn that they may not have infinite life, you know, that something is coming that they didn't anticipate, I think panic and dread are fully natural. But there are ways to handle those, and I think spirituality, your religious viewpoint, is one of them. And I wrote this book, you know, Facing Death, Spirituality, Science, and Surrender, to show that I think science is coming around to support some of the things that people who are spiritual or religious have been thinking and believing for, well, centuries.
Yeah, I'm glad you, because that's exactly where I wanted to go. I've noticed that, and again, some of it's kind of new agey, which is kind of strange, but that really, yeah, spirituality in science, physics, quantum physics, however you look at some of this stuff, is starting to explain a lot of spiritual practices that we've had really since the beginning of time and ancient people for a very long time. So to me, I'm fascinated going down that road because it makes sense. And when you can tie in the science to back up the spiritual practices for people, and then you have that aha moment of, oh, wow, we actually see the science that backs it up. I think there's a comfort to those once they actually see those dots connect, isn't there?
Yeah, I believe that's true. It's certainly true for me. I've been a devotee of science ever since before I was in high school, which was now a long, long time ago. But what's fascinating now is a couple of things. We have much better resuscitation science and critical care in the ICU, so that near-death experiences that used to be kind of odd and unusual are now very, very common. And it's I know a group of investigators now composed of lots of very serious scientists and doctors who are studying near-death experiences because I think they have a lot to tell us about what may happen not only as we die, but afterwards.
What is the general consensus, both spiritually and scientifically right now, of a near-death experience? And for those that don't know what a near-death experience is, someone that may have died temporarily and have seen something on the other side, met a relative, met God, met Jesus, whoever it is, maybe have traveled somewhere or even just hovered above their body, listened to the conversation and saw something that they normally wouldn't have seen, which, again, is worth the investigation. And it's weird that we're finally just starting to research this to try to understand it more. But from a scientific standpoint, from your standpoint, what is the general consensus of what it is? Are we actually leaving our body, or is it just something happening inside of our brain, do you think?
I don't think it's possible yet to say that for sure one way or the other, but it could be both. One of the aspects of this scientifically that's fascinating is we have better and better ways of imaging what happens in the brain when we, more and more we're just by chance getting EEG and brain imaging at the point when people die, and it seems to show that the parts of the brain that are you would think might be activated, like memory, really comes into play after the person has died. But I think the most fascinating stories are the ones that are very well documented now, told by people who, and I have one of these stories in my book, where people are deliberately, their hearts are deliberately stopped for certain kinds of brain surgery where blood pressure has to come down to zero to fix certain vascular problems in the brain where you can't have any bleeding. And while these people are clinically completely without any brain function, they have pretty impressive experience. And I think you have to count this as evidence because it's the same throughout cultures. More and more people are reporting them, that something may survive when the body dies. And I find it both fascinating and reassuring for lots of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you remember the movie in the 80s or early 90s, I believe, but Flatliners, that had Kevin Bacon in it, had Jack Bauer, I call him Jack Bauer, Kiefer Sutherland in it.
Kiefer Sutherland,
yeah,
right,
where exactly. where they were trying to do it intentionally to get that death experience by stopping their heart intentionally for that, which is wild. Have you seen as well, as someone may be on their deathbed and close to moments, minutes, hours before passing, do you see them as they get closer and closer, and I guess that veil getting thinner, have you seen reports of them having a spiritual experience just before they pass over?
Yes, I think that's very common. But I want to, this is something I really try to get into some depth in the book. The reason I got into all this, I wasn't particularly religious when I started out, but as I spent more time with people at the time of death, I began seeing that very similar things happen to almost everyone if they are conscious as they're nearing death. About a third of the time we're not, because we're either confused or maybe there's serious Alzheimer's, but two-thirds of the time, people are conscious as they approach the end. And a very similar thing happens in many cases. People get simpler and simpler. The concerns that you have in everyday life kind of get peeled away. And actually, what I try to explain in the book is I think most of the aspects of what we think of as ourselves get peeled away one by one. And what's left is something very essential and elemental. You might, if you're religious, call it your soul. Yeah. It's the very basic essence of who we are as humans. And it's very, it's just a sacred experience to be with someone as that's happening, because you find out that you're really talking to the real person, the person who's actually, it's actually you. And it's thrilling and fulfilling to relate to people at that point.
Yeah, it almost sounds like in those that are in the spiritual world or the spiritual community talk about the ego, which is essentially your identity, your personality, your character, like who you are that individualizes yourself from somebody else, that it sounds like that seems to fade away, like you said, where you're just seeing the raw soul of the actual individual.
Yes, and that you have just put your finger on a critical point. that I think is emphasized in Eastern religion for thousands of years, and some aspects of Western religions too, and lots of maybe all spiritual traditions, and that is we walk around, this is something that has taken me by surprise over the years about myself, I walk around, everyone walks around believing that you know exactly who you are.
Yeah.
And that may not be actually who you are. You call it the ego. There are many aspects of how we act and what we do, what we think all the time that aren't really essentially who we are. And I think it doing a little homework, maybe it's meditation, there are many ways to, maybe it's prayer.
Yeah.
Maybe there are ways to get that elemental central core of yourself.
To find that deeper. I tell you what, Brad, hang on the line. We got to take a hard break here. I want to continue this conversation right around the corner. It's Dr. Brad Stewart. Facing Death is the book. We'll continue this conversation right around the corner. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into the program. What a show we've had today, man. Pretty fascinating when it comes to religious talk and spiritual talk and you getting set for Easter holiday, obviously remembering the reason for the season. So happy Easter to you as you go out and celebrate. There's some political movements trying to distract you and focus on something else ridiculous when it comes to the Easter holiday, but don't allow that to get into you. Right now, we're hanging out with Dr. Brad Stewart, author of the book Facing Death, Spirituality, Science, and Surrender at the End of Life. You can find it on Amazon and other places. Super fascinating conversation, and just trying to put myself in the position of, you know, being at that time preparing to cross over to that other side where you're, even if someone with has super deep faith and you're like, I'm ready, I think I've lived a decent life, I'm ready to go, still a little nervous, obviously don't know what to expect here, but kind of excited, kind of nervous, kind of scared all at the same time, which I'm sure all those emotions flood you right towards the end. Brad, if you could, we got a couple minutes left here on the show. Talk about some of the experiences or stories that you've seen of someone that is about ready to cross over, and have they mentioned about seeing ancestors or family members at their bedside, or seeing the bright light, so to speak, or seeing a religious icon that shows up and helps them as they're about ready to cross? I mean, do you hear some of these experiences happen?
Yeah, in fact, one of my best friends, best friend for 50 years, just died a couple of years ago, and well before he died, he had a condition with one of his blood vessels where he sort of sprang a leak, so he went very suddenly. He was with it up until the end, but you know, several months before he died, he started seeing his mother. His wife had died of cancer a few years before he started seeing her, and you see this often, if you believe the stories that people bring back who are resuscitated or revived, say in the intensive care unit, it's pretty much universal, and it doesn't matter if you're Christian, if you're Buddhist, it doesn't matter what your background is, you will tend to see people that you have known in life. It's almost as if they're there to welcome you and help you not be scared, help to reassure you that things are okay. And, it's so easy these days, to get distracted by the differences that people have and the arguments, but it seems that when you get to the other side, there is an air of love and acceptance that people describe almost universally as more fulfilling than anything they ever experienced in life. So, to me, it's natural to be very frightened. I've been a cancer patient myself. I was terrified when I got my diagnosis. It was taken care of by surgery, and knock wood, I think I'm okay. But, everyone is going to be frightened when they're confronted with this. But I think we can be a little reassured that if there is something waiting on the other side, and if it's surprising at all, it's surprising in how comforting and peaceful and loving it is.
Yeah.
So that's been the lesson that I've taken from this over the years.
That is amazing. And there's so many other directions I want to go with this, too, with some of the scans, like brain scans that we've heard about in the news about people that have died under a brain scan or under when they go into deep prayer or meditation on what parts of the brain actually activate, and the dream part of the brain that seems to activate the same place, and the pineal gland, which is another whole nother conversation, which is what actually produces the stuff that gives you dreams when you actually sleep. And that people can activate when they're in a deep prayer or meditation as well. But we're out of time, my friend. So I want to go into those conversations, and we just don't have time to do it. But the last question for you in about 30 seconds is, what do you think is one of the most profound things that you've seen is studying and researching this as a doctor and a scientist?
I think the most profound lesson I take from this is what people say when they are brought back. And often they're brought back a little reluctantly. They say that the universe is made of love. And this is despite all the things that happen in this world that may divide us. The entire universe is made from love and is conscious and aware. We don't see it necessarily on this side, but it may be what's waiting for you when you depart.
That is very comforting, and I think in a great way to go into an Easter weekend for sure. Facing Death, Spirituality, Science, and Surrender at the End of Life is Dr. Brad Stewart. Brad, thank you so much for coming on the show, my friend. Happy Easter to you. Would love to get you back on and chat again further.
That'd be great. Happy Easter to you, too.
Hey, appreciate it very much. There it is. We're done for today. Back at it again here soon. Until then, be your own voice of reason. Let's be that catalyst for change. Let's have those deep conversations and make ourselves a better person each and every day. Until then, happy Easter to you. This is The Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio. Bye.